Welcome to the Coaching Culture Podcast. I'm JP Nurbin, and I'm joined by my co-host, Nate Sanderson.
In this episode, we discuss practical ideas to help you develop as a coach and build your team's culture. Now, we want to get you out of here in 30 minutes or less, so let's get started.
You're listening to episode 72, How to Get Your Players to Embrace Their Role. So I'm excited to be joined by Nate today to be discussing, for what many of our listeners, basketball coaches, wrestling coaches, hockey coaches, is a really big challenge for them currently in their season, which is getting players to not only understand, not only to accept, but really to embrace their role within the team. And for many coaches, they're starting to tighten up those roles and responsibilities. And I was recently reading a book about Nick Saban, and it was about his time at Michigan State and when he started to really identify what now is called the process. And like that processed approach towards coaching, Nick Saban was really one of the first coaches out there to do that. And it was actually when he was working with a psychologist, a sports psychologist from Michigan State while he was coaching at Michigan State, that helped him to really identify their process at their program there. And one of the big keys to identifying the process was to be sitting down with every player and mapping out individually what their role was and breaking it down to this very, very simple things of what they needed to do well for the team to be successful. And I think that that's a really challenging thing, not just to be able to define it, but then to get players to accept it and to embrace that role. But that's really what separates, I think, you know, the good from the great teams. One of my favorite books out there is Extreme Ownership by Jocko Willink. And he really talks about, even from the standpoint of the Navy SEALs, he calls it leading down the chain. And he says that it's paramount for the senior leaders to make sure that the junior leaders and all the troops out on the battlefield understand how their role contributes to the big picture. And that they also understand that when certain people go down in combat, that they know what their job is to step into that role. And so he really goes into some great strategies there. But I want to kind of ask you, Nate, because you've really refined this process for how you get players to not only accept but embrace their role. And so what, in your opinion, is the first step in getting players to not only understand but to embrace their role within the team?
Well, the first thing, JP, I want to make clear to our listeners is that I've been coaching basketball for 17 years now, and I have been absolutely awful at communicating with players about their roles and having honest conversations about what's expected of them. And it isn't really until the last couple of years where I think we've stumbled upon some things that have been really, really effective for us in just encouraging players, as you said, not only to understand and accept their roles, but hopefully to embrace them and do them to the best of their ability. You know, and I think before you even get into some of that individual communication with players, your team has to be in a place where they understand the value of every job, right? And that every player on the team has a different role, both on the court and off the court. And yet all of those roles are essential for the team to be able to perform at its best. And so before you can really, I think, even get buy-in into the individual piece, you got to start laying the groundwork for everybody to be on board that our ultimate purpose here as a team, both as individuals and collectively, is for us to play our best, right? And particularly for us play our best at the end of the season. And so that means that we're going to have individual responsibilities. We're going to hone in on those, and we're going to try to do those for the best of the team. You know, as Belichick says, I always do what's in the best interest of the team, not necessarily of each individual, because every role typically is going to require some sacrifice, right? I mean, even players that are asked to score a lot or play a lot of minutes, there are things that are difficult and challenging about those roles as well. And so we really start with the groundwork of, can we just accept the idea that everybody's going to have a different job and that everybody's job is essential for us to be able to perform at our best as a team?
You know, I like how you kind of differentiate between on the court and off the court, right? And it's not just about, or on the field or off the field, it's not just about what they're doing when they're playing, or just when it's game time, and that you also are kind of designating that as some of the responsibilities as well. One thing that I think is huge too, and I think this is really at the core one of the biggest challenges to help players embrace that, is to really understand that they have to be able to separate what they're able to do on the court or on the field from really who they are as a person and how much you care about them. And I think that that's, you know, something that, you know, will obviously come through when you discuss this process for you and how you operate or how you get your players to buy in within the season.
Well, certainly having that rapport with a player is going to make some of those conversations hopefully easier, and not just easier, meaning that it's more comfortable for you as the coach or more comfortable for them as the player, but probably even more so that those lines of communication are going to remain open throughout the year. You know, I think a lot of coaches are willing to have the individual talks early in the year of saying, okay, we've done, you know, 2 weeks of tryouts or a week and a half or whatever it is. We've looked at the team, and now here we've kind of honed in on, JP, this is going to be your role as a player on the court in this position, right? And so we kind of set the stage for them early in the year. But after that, I don't know that a lot of coaches are following up consistently throughout the year, or that players always feel the freedom to come back to their coach and say, I don't really understand what I'm supposed to be doing. Or the question I get much more often is, I don't understand what I need to do in order to get a different job, or in order to get more responsibility, or to in order to get more playing time or shots or whatever it might be. And if you don't have the rapport that makes those conversations possible throughout the year, that's when some of that frustration can start to fester. Kids can become a little bit disgruntled. Maybe if they don't feel like they have a chance to progress or to earn more time or whatever it might be, then that starts to affect their effort and their buy-in as you go on through the season. So certainly having that relationship piece in place and nurturing that throughout the year is critical for any communication that's going to happen regarding a player's role.
Now, how did you present the job descriptions to your team this season? You know, you talked about that being critical on the court, off the court. How did that conversation play out?
So one of the things, JP, that we've done differently this year than in years past, and again, this is just building on the evolution of my many failures with previous teams, is trying to figure out what's the best way to enter into the conversation about what your job is, right? What your role is, what we see, where we see you can improve, and whatever. We actually started this in the summer. So our team this year, we played probably 22, 25 summer games, something like that. And we videotaped all of those games and kind of developed this grading system for players on offense and on defense, okay? And it wasn't just statting. It was grading their individual defensive responsibilities and how they handled, you know, things on offense. So not just assists, but like if they created a shot for somebody else and that person missed the shot, in a regular statistic, they wouldn't get the assist, but we would give them a point for that because it was a potential assist, right? They gave them the opportunity to score. So we did this sort of behavior-based grading system over the summer. And so I taped all these games, and before we started our season, the week before, we had a team meeting, kind of getting everybody organized, and I kept all the players that got graded over the summer at the end of this big team meeting, and I went through the entire system with them. I said, here's what we were looking for. Here's how the points work. Here's what the numbers mean. And so they got this individual report back that had all of their grading points on it, broken down into different categories, and then a narrative. So the narrative was, here's what we like about you as an offensive player. Here's where we think you can improve. Here's what we like about you as a defensive player. Here's where we think you can improve. And this is what we see in you as a teammate. And here's a place where we think you can grow as a teammate, right? And so they get this thing going into the season, so right before the season starts. That gives them a framework even before we start, you know, tryouts in the first couple of weeks of the preseason, so they understand what we see of them, where we see their strengths, and where we see opportunities for them to improve, okay? So now, after we've done the first week or 2 weeks of practice, we follow up on that, and we start having these individual conversations about, this is where we see your role for the season. On the court, we see you right now as the starting small forward, and here are the responsibilities of that position. Just like if they were applying for a job or they were reading through the classifieds and they saw a description of a job, that's what we're trying to give them. Okay, so it isn't necessarily you, JP, like your strengths, your weaknesses, but it's the job of the starting small forward. This is what that person does, whoever ends up earning that spot, which is where we think you are right now. Okay, does that make sense?
And then, yeah, so one thing here, Nate, I think is critical is not every coach is going to have the summer or the time that you had to be able to put that report together. But I think there's great value in what you did. And even this could be done over, if you only had one practice to observe them in your tryouts, and you pick a roster of 12 people from that tryout, you can still take whatever information you have and communicate where you think they are offensively, their strengths, weaknesses, defensively, and also with their as a teammate, right? Those behaviors. And obviously you've done a much more, you know, bigger gathering of data, and someone with even more time and more resources could do more, right? But you've done what you can. I think that wherever a coach is and whatever situation is having that initial transparency from the start of, this is where we see you. And now I love how you've identified, we see you fitting this role as far as a job description. And it just kind of separating the player, that person, right, from the role. Like, so they're not necessarily attached to it. So I think the way you've presented it there, players are less inclined to say, well, I'm the starting point guard for the rest of the season, or I'm the starting, you know, midfielder for the rest of the season. It's more of like, right now, you fit this description best.
Well, I think you raise a good point, JP. You know, the whole purpose of the system that we're using, and you're right, it's pretty extensive. And I spent 2 months grading that film in September and October to be able to put those reports together. But the thing that we're trying to communicate to our players going into the season is, this is where you are right now. And I think when players are disgruntled about their roles, or they're frustrated, or their parents think that they should be getting more time or more shots or whatever it is, a lot of it is rooted in the fact that they come into the year thinking that maybe they're better than they are, or maybe that they've earned a position that they haven't necessarily done yet. You know, and so part of it is, we're just trying to get everybody anchored in, this is exactly where we see you going into the year, and here's your next step for your growth, right? Whether that's into a specific job or not, here's where you are.
And so I've done probably a dozen plus surveys with teams this year, just kind of in the winter season for sports. And one of the biggest kind of areas, actually probably the number one area where players are unhappy or they give coaches poor ratings, is that they claim to not understand their role. Now, they may understand their role and just not be accepted, or they just actually may not understand their role. But either way, this is probably the one area that I see as the most common, you know, poor scores, right, for coaches. And so we're obviously not doing a great job of this. And I think you brought up a point there that maybe they have a misperception, right? The reality and what's their perception aren't meeting. So we've got to help them to bridge that gap there.
Well, JP, I think that's a great point, you know, and one of the reasons why we created kind of this extensive point system in our summer games is because we want there to be some objectivity to their evaluation. You know, it's not just my subjective viewpoint versus their subjective viewpoint versus their parents' subjective viewpoint. Like, we tried to create something that removed whatever biases I might have to be able to give them some feedback about, this is how we evaluate your game, what's actually happening on the court according to these various categories, so that some of that's subjective, you know, in terms of like how good was their footwork or their, you know, on-ball defense or whatever. But for the most part, it's just raw data to try to communicate, again, this is where you're at. Compared to your teammates, compared to the team average, this is where you are.
Yeah, and I think that's huge, having this data. So, and we know we've on a previous episode talked about, you know, Brian McCormick came on to talk about the competitive cauldron, right? That's data that you're gathering in practice on who's winning at different things within practice that guides your decision. Also, with other coaches I've worked with, they've been tracking commitments, right? And so at week one of their season, they say, we're making a commitment as a team for everyone to stay 5 minutes after practice, get so many shots up, or to come in early, or, you know, sending texts out to their teammates, encouraging them, or just different things that they're making commitments, and they're stacking those throughout the season, but they're also tracking it. So the coach has not just who's doing well and who's winning in practice, but they're also who's doing all these intangibles, and they're tracking the intangibles. Once again, maybe that's for you or maybe that's not, but the reality is you've got data to present to the player and to the parent later down the road when you're saying, this is why we see you in that role. And so I think the more data we can gather, the more informed our decision can be, and also the easier we can communicate that to the player and even the parent. So Nate, let's move on to the next thing here, which is when the player comes, every coach faces it at every stage in this, at certain stages of the season, which is, you know, coach, I don't understand my role. How do you address that?
Well, one of the things that's been really good for us over the last few years, we've actually done this, I think, for maybe 4 years in a row now, is having, we call it the ladder conversation. So this year on a Saturday morning, we brought our varsity players in, got them breakfast, and we sat them in the lecture hall. And I wrote up on the whiteboard everybody's name and where everybody was at in the rotation. This is before we went into our first game of the season. And our purpose for putting that up and discussing it was, first of all, I think that one of the mistakes that I made in the past is when I would have conversations with players about their role, I would only talk to them individually about the role that they had at that time. And so we've kind of expanded this ladder conversation to do a lot of things for us, okay? So let me kind of walk you through what that was like. So we put our starting five up on the whiteboard, we draw a line, and we say, okay, starting point guard is Sally, right now in our first game coming up on Tuesday night. Susie is going to back up Sally. So we put her name to the right of Sally, like so you can see sort of the depth chart alignment for each position, right? And sometimes players will back up multiple positions or whatever, but you just kind of show where everybody's at. And then I walk through, here's how I'm planning on rotating in the first game. So these starting five, at 4 minutes, I'm going to bring this person in, then I'm going to bring this person in, and then we're going to see how it goes from there. So everybody knows what to expect going into the first game, because not everybody's going to be happy, right? Everybody's going to want to play more, think they're going to get more minutes or whatever it might be. But this way they can get used to the idea before we actually take the court. So maybe they're disappointed, you know, but they can handle that disappointment on Saturday rather than figuring out how to handle it on Tuesday night when they're sitting on the bench.
I think that's huge, because you want people to accept their role, not in those moments before the game, right? And then they can prepare themselves. Okay, I'm not going to play this much, or this, I have to be ready in these moments when this player is coming off or she's not playing well. I think that's so helpful for them to not only accept their role, but be ready for whatever role they're given.
JP, I think that's an excellent point, because the thing that we're trying to communicate when we talk about these roles collectively as a team is we're coming back to that initial idea that we talked about before of you might be the backup point guard, or you might be third in line to be the post player that may or may not play on a given night. But when we start talking about the role of the third string post player, however you would phrase that, you start going through the value in that role in front of the whole team, right? And so, again, somebody might think, well, I'm just a reserve and I'm never going to play. I'm 11 or 12 or whatever. But we start telling stories for every single role where, you know, if we have a kid that's number 10 or 11 in the rotation and doesn't usually play, there's a game that I coached 15 years ago where we went into overtime, we fouled out four of our first eight, and all of a sudden I'm walking down the bench trying to find somebody that's going to go in the game in the last minute of the game in overtime, and the sophomore looks up at me like she's ready to go. So she hasn't played varsity all year long. You throw her in, she hits the basket to tie the game and send it to overtime and scores 5 points in overtime, and we win the game, right? And so she was ready, exactly to your point right there. She was ready, even if she knew she probably wasn't going to get in the game unless something like that happened. But when it was time, she was ready to go. And that was her job in that moment, in that game, that helped us win. And that's the whole point of this part of this conversation, is every single one of you that's up on the board, every single job has the opportunity to help us win a basketball game. In this context, in this situation, be ready for this. And this is why every single one here is important.
So Nate, and that's great, right, that they're always ready for their moment, but there's a reality will set in that they're not going to get their moment sometimes, right? There's not going to be that chance to play. And I think you have started to do a really fantastic job of getting players to understand the challenges of each role, right? Like that there's different positives and negatives, and so that people can empathize with the starters and people can empathize with the girl that's never getting to play. How do you start to facilitate those conversations where players can, you know, have those type of conversations?
I think there's a lot of value in everybody understanding what other players' roles are, so that you see who's in front of you and you understand, you know, what their job is, what's different about being the starting point guard and the backup point guard. Okay. So we give everybody a note card and we ask them to write on the front, given this is where you're starting the season, this is your job description as we've laid it out in front of everybody, what do you like best about your job? What are you looking forward to most about doing this job to help the team win? And so it forces them a little bit, regardless of whether they're the starter or the scorer or whatever, they have to search for some value for themselves in that position to move forward, right? And then we have them turn the card over and we have them write, for you personally, what do you anticipate will be the biggest challenge for you in performing your job? So now they are saying, you know, well, I've struggled with confidence in the past with my jump shot. Now I know that the team's kind of relying on me to take more shots, and I'm going to have to be more mentally tough to be able to handle the nights when I'm not on. Okay. What that does in the room, so they write that on the front and the back of the card, and then we just go around and they read their card. They say, this is what I look forward to. This is what I value in my job. This is what's going to be hardest for me. Is it creates, number one, value for them. They have to try to find value in where they are. And number two, it just creates this sense of empathy that, you know, every job has its challenges. And for me personally, you know, if you're an upperclassman and you're not in the rotation, or if you're a starter and now you're coming off the bench, like that's when they talk about, for me personally, this is what is going to be hard in this job. It just allows them to understand how to encourage each other. It helps us as coaches to be able to follow up with some of those comments that they make about, how are you doing with this challenge, you know, 2 weeks later, or what have you enjoyed most about it as the season goes on. But just that transparency, that vulnerability one to another, I think is huge, because they start to realize that everybody is struggling with something. Everybody's going to be challenged by something in their role. And it just sort of allows them to be more supportive of each other on this quest to do your job to the best of your ability so that we can play to the best of our ability.
I think you hit on something huge there. We talk largely about valuing our reserves, like making sure they feel loved and what we can do as a coach. I think that's great, but if you can't get your top players, if you can't get all your players to kind of not only embrace their role, but kind of empathize with other people in their role, then I think you'll always struggle in your team culture. One of my favorite books is Training Soccer Champions by Anson Dorrance. And he's got, you know, this is years of experience, 20-something national championships. He's got a 12-chapter book, and he has one chapter designated to the reserves, right? Your players coming off the bench and how to get them to be bought in and embrace their role. And I think one of the things that he says that's so that it hit me in a big way was, you can tell a team's culture. You know your team's culture by just looking at your bench. How are people engaged? How are people responding? And I don't think there's a team out there that has an engaged bench that embraces that role if the players on the court or on the field aren't appreciating, empathizing, and caring about those people. And so your activity is just a really great way to start to get people to empathize with each other. And I love that. So the last thing we really need to discuss here is, you know, not only do we want them to understand their role, not only do we want them to accept their role, we want them to embrace it, but we want them to keep fighting, right? We want them to keep showing up every day, working to challenge you as a coach about, you know, you want this to be a hard decision. I think that's a good place to be in when you're, you know, week in and week out, you're going, man, that person, that player, she is really, or he's really giving it this week. This, you know, and so you want them to have that, because that's going to make your starters better. That's going to challenge it. It's going to improve, you know, have a great practice environment. So how have you this season got your players to know their path to advancement?
Well, the last part of this meeting, JP, that we have is we talk about that very issue of how is it that you get promoted from one job to the job in front of you. And again, this is part of the value of talking about all of the jobs on the board, is that you start to see, well, the difference between being the third post and the second post and the first post is not just playing time, but it's, you know, responsibilities, and we, like, they understand that there are differences, okay? And I think a lot of times that can be so hard for kids. Like when a player comes to me and says, I don't understand my role, a lot of times what they mean is, I don't understand why I'm not playing when I'm good. Or I don't understand why I'm not playing when the person in front of me has been struggling lately and I'm doing everything you asked me to do in practice, right? So the way that we frame that is a couple of things, okay? And this is, again, a really explicit conversation that we have with our players as part of this meeting at the beginning of the year. So if you want to advance, we tell them, like, you should, exactly as you said, be a little bit dissatisfied with your current job. Like, you have a responsibility to your job, but also you should have the ambition to want to take the job of the person in front of you, right? So here's how that happens. Number one, you have to do your job well. You have to do your job well on the court, You have to do your job well as a teammate. And your number one advocate for promotion is going to be your current boss. The second thing is they have to understand that the responsibilities of the next job are not the same as their current job. And just because they do their current job well doesn't automatically mean that they'll do the next job well. And the example that I give for that is when I was a teacher. You know, if I gave three great lessons in a row as a social studies teacher, I never had a principal come to me and say, man, you're such a good teacher. I think we're going to make you a principal because the job descriptions are way different. Now, that's how the ladder works, right? Typically, you start as an educator and work your way into administration. But it isn't just like, wow, you're really good where you're at, so you must be good at the next job that's above you in the organization. And the last thing that we tell them in terms of just how we see promotions happening in our program, if somebody's going to be passed on the ladder, if a player off the bench is going to become a starter and take somebody's job, okay, we kind of refer back to the wrestling rules, all right? Tom Mashick, good friend of mine at a school I once was at, you know, we talked about like when you set your wrestling lineup, how do guys get in and out of that lineup? And he said, once they've earned their spot, if you want to challenge a guy for a weight class, you have to beat him 2 out of 3 times because it has to be obvious not only to the coaches that you're better, but also to the rest of the team that you're better than that person in that spot. Now, that's easier to do in games where you can be head-to-head like tennis or golf or, you know, on track. You can just run them in a sprint. Some other sports, it's not quite as obvious. But we really try to hold true to that adage that it has to be obvious that you're better in order for you to take a spot from somebody that's already earned it, okay? And sometimes that means that older players are going to get the benefit of the tie. We're going to side with a junior or a senior over a freshman or a sophomore when all things are considered equal because we value their commitment to the program for being with us for 3 or 4 years, right? And so I know a lot of coaches will play younger players to get them more experience, but we want players to stay out and feel like they're valued and that players really have to earn it to pass an upperclassman because I think that just makes it, again, a more palatable situation for everybody involved.
Yeah, no, I love that. And I think as you go throughout your season, you start to have more of those one-on-one conversations. One big suggestion I'd have for coaches in this is when a player asks what they can do to move up, I think this is really critical to move beyond just general things. Well, you got to work on your defense or you got to work on your scoring, your offense. And is to leave them with 2 to 3 measurable commitments. For instance, well, I think if you were to stay after practice and shoot so many shots, I think if you were to really start to get 8 hours of sleep every night, right? Because you're coming in, you're really tired, or you know, you need to really be committed to your nutrition. Just something very much that they can say, I did do it or I didn't do it. And I think when we can give them those concrete examples of things that they can do that are within their control, that it's going to help improve their chances. And that's just a nice thing that because you give them something what's in their control to increase their chances. And I always say to increase your chances of moving up. It's not going to guarantee it.
Well, and I'm going to push back a little bit on that too, JP, because I think the other thing that players don't realize is that their playing time is not really entirely under my control. I mean, it is in the sense that I'm going to make the decision of who starts and who subs when. But ultimately, if this is a competitive environment, they could potentially do everything that you ask, and there still may be players that are ahead of them because they're also doing everything that I ask them to do. So we talk a lot about that as well, that, you know, your job is to give yourself the best opportunity to advance or to earn another job. But really, it's outside of my control because it depends on what everyone else does.
As we wrap this episode up, Nate, you've given us so many really good practical tools that we can, you know, kind of implement with our team. The coaching notes are going to be something coaches are going to want to get their hands on from this episode for sure. Is there anything else, though, you'd add to all of our discussion here about getting them to embrace and keep fighting for their role?
Well, JP, I'm going to leave you guys with two final thoughts here. Number one, the importance of having ongoing conversations with your players throughout the year about their role, I think, is critical, and that's something that I haven't done or been committed to before really this season. The last thing that I would leave you with is when we think about trying to get players to embrace their role, but you have to embrace the opportunity that you have now because it's going to benefit you and it's going to benefit us. Don't allow yourself to focus on the things that you don't have to keep you from excelling and enjoying what you do have in your current role.
Today's been an awesome podcast. Definitely go to thriveonchallenge.com and subscribe to the coaching notes there with the newsletter. Also, I'll be dropping a few articles this week. I've written an article for players, right, about accepting and embracing their role, as well as an article for parents, something you could potentially share with your parents that I've written. We've also got another great podcast back in, I believe, around 22 or 23 with Jordan Patterson, a player from Alabama, Alabama softball team. She shares her story about embracing her role. So we've got a lot of great other resources out there for you. I'll be sure to link that all in the weekly newsletter. Thanks for listening to the Coaching Culture Podcast. Have a good one.